As has been pointed out, the first chapter of Ruth is printed in your bulletins, and it's very long. It's almost a sermon in itself. So we decided that the telling of that in the children's time was sufficient. But I did want to print it because, you know, as we're talking about it, if you want to reference it, there it is. The chapter's there for you to look at, and feel free to reread it. When I was a kid, you definitely brought your Bibles to church. It wasn't printed in the bulletin. And as a kid, I remember my go-to, if I wasn't particularly interested in the sermon, was to read Ruth or read Esther or Song of Solomon from time to time. But yeah, so anyhow, I read Ruth a lot as a kid, actually, because it's a story. And, you know, with women who had their names spoken amazingly. So anyhow. It's a great story. but it's not our typical Advent reading, as many of you might have noted. Have we ever talked about the story of Ruth during Advent? Well, it is not typically told, but this little book from the Hebrew Scriptures is actually used to being trotted out for occasions it wasn't really meant for. Ruth's words to Naomi, "Wherever you go, I will go. Your God will be my God. Your people, my people," is often included, for example, in wedding ceremonies, even though these are words spoken by a widow to her late husband's mother, which is not exactly a romantic setting. But I will say, I actually think it makes perfect sense to use this wisdom for a wedding, because a huge part of marriage is the devotion and loyalty two people give one another, even perhaps especially when they're deep in the mundane, non-romantic realities of day-to-day life. To remain chosen family, even when many of the ties that originally bound you fall away. So anyhow, not to put down the use of this passage in weddings, but just to say, yes, we can. It's used to being pulled out in interesting situations. You could say that Joseph and Mary actually, we're in a similar situation, or at least parallels between Joseph and Mary and Ruth and Naomi, in that Mary's unexpected and unplanned pregnancy must have changed their relationship profoundly. When Joseph was feeling, we don't know, bewildered, perhaps embarrassed, maybe angry, unsure how to proceed is the one thing we know, he was visited by an angel who encouraged him to stand by Mary to fulfill the vows that he had already intended to make to her to be her family. And then the whole reason they went to Bethlehem was because Joseph made the same decision as Ruth. He took Mary to Bethlehem to have her counted along with him in the census as part of his family. "Where I go, you are welcome. My people will be your people." Neither Joseph nor Ruth were legally required or customarily expected to remain with Mary or Naomi. So as one commentator said, Ruth's speech must be understood as an act of chesed, showing love and loyalty over and beyond what is considered normal or expected. There was no seeming way that Ruth could benefit personally from continued association with Naomi. Reason alone could not justify Ruth's decision to cling to her mother-in-law. Her words and actions had to be grounded by loyalty and love rather than logic. Again, you could perhaps use these same words to describe Joseph's choice to remain with Mary. There are significant differences between the story of Ruth and Naomi and Joseph and Mary, too, obviously. Joseph and Mary were headed to Bethlehem knowing that they were about to start a family with a new baby ready to be born, whereas Ruth and Naomi were returning to Bethlehem because they had lost all their family members, their husbands, and Naomi's sons. Although, spoiler alert, by going to Bethlehem with Naomi, Ruth ends up becoming an ancestor of Jesus. So in a way, there's a little bit of nativity parallel there, actually. But that's not at all evident in chapter one, or could possibly have been a part of Ruth or Naomi's imaginings at that point. Another difference is that in Ruth, we're privy to the conversations that they had leading up to and following the moment when Ruth proclaims that she'll stay with Naomi. We don't have a similar account of the conversations between Joseph and Mary. Did Mary protest as Naomi did? Did Joseph put into words his commitment to Mary? We get to hear a lot about Naomi and Ruth, really, based on this first chapter. And based on this first chapter, you would actually think maybe this should be the book of Naomi. And when you actually get to the end of the book of Ruth, it ends up wrapping back around to Naomi and how Ruth's, the relationship that the marriage that she ends up forming and the child that she has is seen as a completion and a return for Naomi. So I think there could be an argument that this could be the book of Naomi. But Naomi speaks of Ruth and her other daughter-in-law, Orpah, very highly in this story, acknowledging that they had been good to her sons and to her. But we don't actually know whether she wants them to stay with her or not. Twice she tells them, three times, "Turn back, I can't offer you much. Go home and find new husbands." After the second time, Orpah leaves, but Ruth stays, and Naomi tells Ruth for a third time, "Go back home, like your sister, where your people and your gods are." After Ruth insists for a third time, Naomi relents. It doesn't say that she responds, it says that she didn't say anything anymore. She doesn't say, "Thank you, I was really hoping you'd stay." So we don't know. In fact, she maintains a self-narrative of abandonment and bad luck, identifying only with her losses. And when she arrives in her hometown, it doesn't even say she introduces Ruth to anyone or says, "Thankfully, my daughter-in-law came along with me. That was awesome." It just says Naomi told them to call her by a name that meant bitter because of all that she had lost, instead of Naomi, which had connotations of sweetness. So this isn't a romantic story, and Ruth's aren't words of romantic commitment. But I also think this isn't a story about Ruth doing the right thing. Because Orpah is not judged for her decision in this story. Staying behind wasn't wrong or neglectful. It wasn't Orpah's path. It wasn't the choice before her that was right for her. But there's something so clear and certain about Ruth's words. I think we love to imagine someone stepping in so clearly and certainly if we were as lost and bereaved as Naomi. We like to think that we would have had that kind of clarity and commitment to stand with someone in the way that Ruth did. And I say that partly because we so often choose the words of Ruth in ceremonies of commitment, even to this day. I think that really resonates with us, the desire to have that clarity and be able to say those words and make that kind of stand with someone. But this is one of the many times when I wonder what I'm missing by seeing this story across so many miles and years. To my eyes, the first chapter of Ruth seems to be the story of a woman who can't see the ties she has, a woman who feels so profoundly alone that she can't really see that she is being offered profound accompaniment, and who doesn't seem particularly interested in the grand gesture that Ruth is making. I found it interesting that in the Jewish tradition, this interchange between Naomi and Ruth here was actually used as a pattern for testing the sincerity of converts to Judaism. Noting that Naomi says, "Go back," three times to Orpah and Ruth, the rabbis concluded that a would-be proselyte should be repulsed three times. That's not exactly Christian evangelism as I've been taught it, so. Although, when I hear people's experiences trying to make their way into churches, we might want to think about how we're doing that. And as Naomi tried to convince Ruth that accompanying her would have its disadvantages, the rabbis concluded that the would-be convert must be told about the possible hardships involved in becoming a Jew. So it's fascinating that what sounded like coolness and ingratitude in the face of generosity and love to me was seen simply as practical wisdom in the rabbinic tradition and celebrated to the point of emulating it. Whenever we have sermons, or we're always trying to figure out what we're seeing across that distance. So it's not a surprise. It happens for every passage. And we always try to do our reading into the history, but I think it's important to just always acknowledge that distance and how we're laying ourselves onto that story. We can't know for certain what Naomi felt about Ruth staying with her, but this story of a loss of traditional relationships of love and stability, followed by an offer of committed companionship in the form of a less traditionally acknowledged relationship, and even Naomi's seeming ambivalence about that offer, certainly feels like it has parallels to today. Our society is still very oriented around certain traditional relationships, and there's still a real bias that straight marriage is what offers that stability. And our legal system makes sure that that's also the kind of relationship that we actually give privilege to. So it's easier to be supportive in that particular relationship. And church is an institution that can consciously and unconsciously uphold that in unhelpful ways. Hear me to say that I think it's important to help people uphold their marriages, but I think sometimes we can uphold marriage as the only way or the best way for people to be with one another. There is a lot of loneliness in our society, but wedding rings aren't the only answer and aren't the answer full stop. Even within a marriage, one must work intentionally to manage and maintain connection, for there certainly can be loneliness within marriage. So much of Western history and literature is focused, though, on these twosomes of a straight marriage. Even the Ecclesiastes passage, part of the reason I thought it would be interesting to read it is it really lays out all the ways culturally we talk about the longing for this, that two is the magical thing. It really does, it does say then that that the three-ply cord is the strongest, but really our imagination is so wrapped up into the romantic two. I have to say out loud, though, that in all honesty, when I was writing this sermon, like, I literally kind of like had a vision of Miley Cyrus like dancing across my screen. Maybe that means nothing to some of you, but the reason for that is I heard her song Flowers in my head so strongly. But I can buy myself flowers, write my name in the sand, talk to myself for hours and say things you don't understand. I can take myself dancing, and I can hold my own hand. Yeah, I can love me better than you can. So that also needs to be said. In Genesis 2, it reads, "When two people are married, they become one." And there's poetic beauty in that, and also truth about the many aspects of life that merge in marriage. But I love that part of the Ruth and Naomi story is the reminder that there are so many ways to care for and companion one another in this life. And they're not always emerging into one. And I love how Ruth named that for what it was. She was caring for someone she loved, and that commitment was real and huge, and it wasn't to be taken for granted because she was a daughter-in-law. She claimed it and she honored it. And I think about how so often women, maybe particularly, I'll say in the Mennonite tradition just because it's what I know, but women do these things, but they don't say it. They just do it. and I think there hasn't been space to always say it, for one thing, but I think claiming it and saying, you know, by the way, take note, this is what I'm doing. Like, with my life, I'm companioning you. I'm going with you. And not sitting back and waiting for the community to acknowledge that or someone else to acknowledge it. And I think there's real strength and beauty in that as well. And at best, I think that faith community can be a place that fosters many ways of not being alone, many ways of walking together. So as we look at this story, I invite you to just carry with you, and maybe reread the chapter, but just carry with you these characters and think about what the invitations might be within this story for you, for each of us. I think there's an invitation in Orpah's example of honoring her inner knowing to stay. Ruth's example of persisting in the honoring of a commitment to chosen family, even when it meant leaving all she knew and naming it for what it was. Naomi's example of having more community and sweetness and compassion in her life than she could see or acknowledge in her time of grief. And hey, Miley's example of knowing when to buy your own flowers too. We need not go alone. And there are so many ways to companion one another. How can we see that? How can we choose that? And how can we foster that in our community? Foster all the important ways that we companion one another here. Thank you. Amen.